You're listening to Show Me the Numbers with Yael Kagan, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon from LA on LA Talk Radio. This is me, Yael Kagan, in my show, Show Me the Numbers, exploring different subjects, interesting subjects, trying to get good things, good positive changes to the world. So thank you all for being here. And I will introduce very, very quickly, get into introduction of my guest this time, and that is Joe Tabanella. So welcome, Joe. I've known Joe for probably like 14 years, I think, since my days in Hypnosis Motivation Institute, the college where I studied hypnosis, NLP. You were also my instructor, my trainer, and a mentor at a certain point. So very dear to me. He gave me a lot, I have to say that, and thank him for that. I'm very grateful to meet him. And I invited him to be with me here today, and shortly he will introduce himself. But Joe is an hypnosis instructor, an NLP and MER trainer. Joe, I'm giving you the stage to introduce yourself, and then we'll dive straight into our beautiful subject.
Hi, it's nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me. You pretty much said it. I work at a Milestones Ranch in Malibu. It's a dual diagnosis treatment center for addiction. I teach at Hypnosis Motivation Institute. I teach how hypnosis and biofeedback work together. I train people in what's called mental and emotional release technique, neurolinguistic programming, NLP. I'm trained in brain spotting and open focus and several other modalities. And I use a fusion of all of the above to kind of create change. But it really comes down to two or three principles, which is what I like to do, distill it down to the simplest principles of how we work, how we create change, and why it's important to be the programmer of the brain rather than the brain being the programmer of us. How's that?
Wonderful. Love it. Wonderful. And in a world of constant change and challenges, we're here to explore how to navigate difficult times together. And we want to talk today about how to make changes, how to make positive changes. And there's so many subjects I could have talked to you about. And I was really, really debating between addiction, which is another big thing that we want to discuss. But I said, no, let's stay with one of the classes that I took with you, which was the Law of Attraction, which I find fascinating. I felt like it did change a lot of things in my life. And therefore, I decided that this is the subject that I want to talk to, because we want to try to attract positive changes to our life, to have better life. And we need to learn how to do that. And you do it very, very well. So I will start by asking you, what is the Law of Attraction?
Oh, boy. I'll give you my definition based on my experience. And everything I've learned is based on trial and error and my own personal experiences, understanding the bridge between what we call miracles or prayer or fortuitous events happening out of nowhere, anomalies, experiences that go against statistical probabilities. That's what I would call like manifesting or attracting an experience that we would like. Now, we're doing this on three different levels. Law of Attraction basically is everything that is inside has to find its like pattern outside. I see it more, it's called transduction, or the law of transduction in a sense, which is we're transducing what's inside into outside. Because we don't really notice things outside unless they live inside, even if we're dealing with them. For example, like doorknobs. How many doorknobs do you touch every day and open and close, right? Hundreds of them sometimes, right? But you don't really think about doorknobs. Even when you're touching them, you're not focusing, you're not even experiencing internally doorknob. You're experiencing something else, even though the physical thing is in front of you. unless you have you're a germaphobe, obviously, then you know that's all you're thinking about are doorknobs, right? But what happens is we think that we're life out there, and life is just confirming what's in here. And so when we see something out there that doesn't match in here, we just delete it as an experience. And when it does match, we have an experience inside we say is happening outside. And there's only really three patterns that are happening outside, which really are happening inside, which are what the brain is looking for. One is based on the survival pattern. So it's one pattern is unresolved emotional issues that are connected to survival or thought they were connected to survival at a very young age. These are abandonment patterns, safety patterns. They're all based on survival, like abandonment, but different patterns within the abandonment. For example, there's abandonment because of shame. I did something bad and now I'm alone. So that's a survival pattern. I don't want to be alone. There's abandonment patterns because I'm not good enough that I've never mastered. And so now I'm never processed that experience of feeling unimportant or not good enough. Or like I said, the shame or not having what I want, the ability to achieve something I want. And that's another pattern of longing or this grief. And so we have all these patterns that if we haven't resolved them emotionally, that's what the brain is looking for in an attempt to survive. So it's really just trying to control our reality. And that's where most of our projections are being experienced on the things that we haven't processed. And because it's survival, the only way to deal with survival is a physical change. So we're always trying to manipulate our environment to release that stress response, but that's not how it works. We think it's how it works because we feel calm if we can control a person, place, or thing in an impermanent world. We think we can feel calm, and we do for a moment, but then we're worried about it changing again. So this is where the suffering, what the Buddhists call attachment aversion and suffering and the ignorance of impermanence comes from. It's this idea that I'm projecting a memory, literally a memory in the moment that I haven't resolved. So it's in the part of the brain that is the ACC, the part of the brain that's worried about what's important, right? And so it's always scanning for it. And that's what we're really projecting. So when people try to change their reality through manifesting or visualization, what we're essentially doing is creating suffering because imagine you're projecting that image onto a movie screen of life. And that's what we keep looking for, worried about, and hoping for. So this is the first pattern, like hoping not to happen, right? Then we start try to visualize something, and it's like taking another projector that's much lighter, much thinner, much less voltage, and we're projecting it onto that screen, hoping that that screen will disappear if we visualize this enough. And oftentimes that actually brings light to that screen, the primary pattern or projection that we haven't resolved. So that's what we're mainly doing. So that's the first pattern, which is the negative pattern. The second pattern is what I was just mentioning, hope of something. So let's say I've never resolved the feeling of being alone or never resolved the terror or sadness of not being loved. Or now I have hope pattern. And this is where people are looking for some kind of magic trick or a book to get that relationship, or if it's money, that trick to day trade and get that money. And so there's this negative projection with the hope projection. And it doesn't mean we can't change our reality. Again, if we have the wherewithal, if we're educated, if we're driven, we can change things. I mean, if I knock on enough doors, I'm going to sell pots and pans. Let's face it, right? If I ask someone out enough times, they're eventually going to say yes. So this pattern of controlling our environment through this experience does create change. But it's not about unconscious manifestation or creativity. It's about reacting to patterns, like projecting lions, killing them, shooting them, successful for a moment until they show up. So that's the second pattern, this pattern of hope. And this is where most people, and I've lived in for years before it really happening. The third pattern is law of attraction pattern. But you don't have to get too woo-woo to understand it. All you have to understand is that when the brain and body is relaxed and not in a survival pattern, it's able to go into what's called a creative pattern, which makes us different from most animals. We're able to just muse about a building that's two stories high rather than one story. We're able to imagine what it might be to be in a situation and feel it now. And as soon as you do that, either real or imagined, as soon as you take something in and appreciate the experience and internalize it and feel it, see it, smell it, taste it, this creates a known positive pattern in the brain. The creative brain starts going, hey, where's this thing this person loved? Like, where is that? So the example I like to give to this pattern, which is the most important pattern, which is why appreciation and practicing gratitude is the most important thing we can do, if nothing else, is let's say you have a friend that comes from out of town and you haven't seen them for a while and you don't know who they are, you haven't seen them for years, and they may have a different religious or political point of view and you just don't know who they are and you don't want to say no. So you're driven by what? Stress response, guilt. I have to go to relieve this image of someone being disappointed in us or angry at us or feeling that we're a bad person. So in a survival sense, you go to that person, you go have lunch, and you find out you have a lot in common, and you start appreciating the experience, and your brain is now registering, and your body, it's more important, your body is registering this experience as pleasant, and you're really liking it, you're really enjoying it, and that person leaves. Now, a month from now, when that person comes into town again, you don't have to get motivated. You don't have to get excited to see them, right? You don't have to, your body just gets excited and it finds a way to see them. It figures it out. And suddenly you're there and you've manifested this experience, but you manifested something you're already experienced. And the only link you have to make between that and manifesting is one is a real experience and the other one is imagined. And when you truly imagine experience sensorially, all five senses, and you feel it, it's essentially the same thing, which is having it now so the body and brain wants to create more of it. And it's a form of what's called positive structural creative tension as opposed to negative structural reaction and moving around the world so you can feel comfortable. The exaggerated version of that is OCD. I just need to keep moving things around or I will feel uncomfortable. And if this happens, I'm uncomfortable. If that happens, I'm comfortable. As opposed to I'm always comfortable. And I just love this pattern more than others. I'm not judging. I don't have any emotional attachment to the negative patterns. I'm just loving this pattern. And it starts to unconsciously want to find more ways to create it. And that's when the subconscious collective, and if you want to go beyond that, the all that is starts to morph into that pattern. As long as there's no resistance to other data that might get in the way. And it's long-winded, I know, but did that make sense?
Yeah, so there's also like a fear involved and the fear from the unknown, what is shutting down basically and taking us to a negative place instead of turning it into maybe good memories, good experience, how good it's going to be, and then bringing a positive thinking with it.
Exactly. And that fear of the unknown is really the fear of the known. It's a fear of a projection that's familiar that we're trying to avoid, that we're not aware of. So we're just avoiding this unconscious projection we're not really conscious of. And then we're reacting to that projection when it's not even there. And then when we see it, we go, there it is. And we think it's reality. Meanwhile, we created it in our minds. Yeah.
Got you. And I'm thinking immediately about, I would say, or I want to ask, like, what could be, or how do you differentiate between wishful thinking and genuine manifestation when applying the principles of the law of attraction?
Great question. So wishful thinking is not addressing my presenting internal representation reality, its projections, its fears, its beliefs, its expectations, and kind of leaving that and this having an image of some hope idea that's very thin. And so it's like putting seeds on very hard soil and just hoping they grow. You know, you might get lucky, right? But they don't go into the soil. And so wishful thinking or fantasizing is escaping this experience that we don't want to feel in our bodies. So the example of this I give is One is reasonable if you're dealing with pain and suffering. So let's say I'm I'm in jail and I know I'm not getting out. I don't believe I can get out. And I, to cope with it, I leave my experience and I fantasize like I'm in, I don't know, Venice, Italy or something, right? And I'm in Venice, Italy. I'm having a wonderful time. And it's basically psychosis. I'm not dealing with reality, right? The guards come over. I go, hey, ciao bello, oh, gnocchi. And I'm like, there he is again, thinking we're serving him, you know, gnocchi. And I'm like, hey, ciao. And I'm living to cope with my external experience. So I'm leaving the emotions and the situation in order to live somewhere else. We do that in pain management, as you know, in hypnosis. Mm-hmm. You go somewhere else so the doctor can have surgery on you, do surgery on you while you're dissociated and you're going somewhere else. It's a defense mechanism. It's a coping mechanism to dissociate. But what happens is it's also a creative mechanism, because if you can dissociate and really internalize that Venice, Italy, so to speak, right? And then you bring it back into your body. Now you're noticing a very clear contrast. Hope somewhere. It's in the now. And the only thing you're experiencing in the now is the photons around you, basically, like with no meaning, just photons. And have an internal preference experience in the now, Italy. You open your eyes and there's a juxtaposition of the two. There's a contrast, right? The greater the contrast, the greater the energy. We call it anxiety, but it's really just the body trying to figure out, hey, this doesn't match what this person is in love with. If we can maintain that juxtaposition, just like building a skyscraper, even a simple thing like a chair, you have to know what it is you're moving towards and love it, while recognizing your body doesn't know how to build that chair or that skyscraper in that moment, or it doesn't know what to do in that moment. And as you wait and you keep that juxtaposition in your mind and you breathe through the discomfort, you don't give it a meaning. This means I'll never get out or I'll whatever it is. You don't give it any meaning other than this moment doesn't match what I would like. And I'm staying with and enjoying the fantasy of what I would like while registering the present moment. What I'm actually feeling in my body is not anxiety. It's my body going, hey, what do we do? And the first line of defense is fight flight, because that's the most power. So it's going to go, we're going to call it anxiety, but it's trying to fight or run. But we can't fight, you know, the wall of the jail cell in that case, right? We can't beat it up and we can't run. And so we have to do something else. So that blood and that energy goes from the brainstem, which is the fight flight, it's in the body, right? Energy up into the central nervous system. From the autonomic, which is the body, to the central nervous system, which is thinking, creativity, new ideas, new behaviors, insights, whatever it is. And it starts to process it. And then all of a sudden, it starts scanning, not us. We're doing our job. We're getting out of the way of it doing its job. Like we learned to walk. We just held the image and everything was processing. And then all of a sudden, we are privy to one of the guards saying, I'm on my mortgage now. They haven't given me a raise. And if we're bank robbers, again, a bank robber, this is a metaphor. I realize, wow, I have some money hidden under that tree from robbing that bank, right? And then all of a sudden you got money hidden and they look at you and you're like, you know, I can tell you where that money, and or you see where the guard is holding their keys. And so you're dealing with what is with the fantasy. You're not leaving what is. You're making the fantasy create what is rather than leaving to go into the fantasy to run from what is. And that juxtaposition creates new behaviors, insights, and ideas. Horrible metaphor, I know, but it's a perfect metaphor because that's what happens when we don't like our situation and we go into fantasy thinking that if I just do a vision board, I'll get out of this situation. We want to have the vision board here. And all the thoughts about here we want to release. And so the only thoughts about here is it doesn't match this. And so I can feel good while processing the emotions of trying to run or fight or figure out something. And if I can keep the two in its wake, juxtaposed at the same time, in its wake, it will leave an insight, a new behavior, an idea that comes from nowhere. As long as you keep it there in place, no matter what. It will start, and all of a sudden, an idea will come from nowhere, especially when you relax a little bit and get out of the way, And suddenly you'll see concrete by the bars, you know, starting to get soft, and you realize, oh, wow, that's interesting. You'll start picking up because the subconscious mind is doing all the processing. As soon as we try to get in the way, based on our known understandings, we actually mess it up. Or we can get things done, but we kind of do it in a forceful way that really doesn't create change. It's just react successfully to the environment.
So I'll give you an example of something that happened to me over the weekend, and I was just doing it. And yesterday with the outcome, and I was like, wait a second, was I actually doing it? Was I practicing the law of attraction? And I'll give you the example without getting into too much information, but it was my daughter's graduation Saturday, and something happened there that upset me and upset some, you know, a lot of other people that were there. And I really felt the emotion going into me and the need to vent and the need to talk about it. And that's what I did. I talked about it with people who were with me, people who were upset. I talked about it with my daughter who was upset herself. And somehow I started feeling like the energy around me started like working it, started having. And I said to myself, okay, what do I do next? I wanted to write a letter to complain. Where do I send the letter? How does the letter look? I started writing it. I started imagining me where I'm sending it. I like everything happened in my head and all the energy around me was dealing with it. I knew that my daughter also, you know, the energy started, you know, running her into that as well. And somehow it got whatever to the dean of the whatever med school in this case. And I got a call from her yesterday, without even sending the actual letter. So everything I was doing, imagining, living it, getting upset, being happy, feeling that a solution came. I saw the whole thing. I lived the whole thing. I didn't run away from it. And suddenly it happened. I got the call yesterday saying, hi, Yael, this is the dean, such and such, and I would like to talk to you. And that's what happened. And today we had that conversation. Is that what I was doing actually was I working with the actual principles of the law of attraction.
Yes, you were dealing with it. And the only question is, were you more tuned in to the solution and therefore processing those emotions until solutions action started to reveal itself to get closer to the solution? Or were you projecting a negative and you just did what you needed to do to change the negative? And both will work, by the way, but one is more unconscious creation and one is more of a known action problem. But from what you're saying, you get to the solution while processing the negative by being okay and letting that negative have some space so you can move into that future, yes?
Right. So it started by dealing with negativity, obviously, because I was very upset. And then I said to myself, okay, you cannot change it. It happened already. So let's look forward. What are you trying to deal with? What are the solution that you, and I didn't even have an answer to myself, what is the solution? And my daughter said to me, Ima, what you are trying to reach is never going to happen because of ABC. And I said, you know what? I appreciate what you say, but I believe that things can be different. And I just started concentrating on the letter and what is the solution I'm trying to get by writing the letter. So I changed in my brain. I never wrote the letter. Never. I just did the letter in my brain. I saw the letter. I saw the writing. I kept changing it and fixing it. But it was all about the solution. What is the solution to this problem?
Exactly. That's basically intention. Exactly. See, intention is the law of attraction. It's just that what happens is we have so much of the other stuff in us, that first pattern, that so it's like what your daughter was saying, she has too much energy to even think that there is a solution. So those are the images that are blocking the solution. With you, you were able to get through it 100%. I'll give you a perfect, like a quick little example, if that's okay, of a mentee that called me yesterday. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. So he called me and he just said, I'm having an issue. I always feel like I'm working always like going uphill. So we have a belief, right? Life is always a struggle to go. And we have an image, right? And he has all this stuff. And it's just a creation. It has nothing to do with anything. It has to do with the brain deleting when things are easy and only reinforcing when things are not. That's all it is. And so then we think we have a reality because we're feeling it inside, and then we get proof outside. So I did an NLP hypnosis technique. It only took like 2 minutes, and he felt really great. And of course, the brain's going to go, okay, you're this person now. What about this pattern? And so the pattern came up for him. So he was doing great. The next day he said, my whole life has changed. I feel like life is effortless. I'm noticing opportunities that things are easier. And then yesterday, I think, or this morning, he got hit with something, right? That felt like the brain wanted to go, you see, this is your evidence of things are always going uphill. So he did the technique again. He made things go downhill and things are easy and effortless. He felt the feeling, but he honored the existing pattern. He recognized that he modeled the parent, or he just decided to create a meaning around a challenge in his life and then keep it in his nervous system. But he shifted and changed it, and he changed his state in the face of the problem. Even though he knew that there was still a problem, he changed his internal picture, his feeling, his sense, and he's mission-oriented that it worked out, even though he knows that he's not lying to himself. He knows there's an external problem, but he doesn't have to have an internal experience of an external problem. That's our creation. And sure enough, he came back from whatever he was doing, and it all worked itself out magically. Like, it just, like what happened to you, just matched who he became. But had he not done that, and he would have stayed in it, it would have reinforced to the brain that this is his projection, his memory, his reality, and it would keep looking for it. And again, it will create it when it doesn't. It will create a problem when he doesn't see it by maybe procrastinating, and then all of a sudden he doesn't have time to do something. Life is always an uphill battle. Or he'll notice it when it does happen, because life happens, right? And most of all, he will delete in his nervous system anytime things kind of work out. He won't even see it. It's just completely deleted. And so it's all happening in here. And that's exactly right. Like right now, I just sent something to get accepted for something. And I started visualizing, and I saw all my projections. What was the projection? Them saying rejected. Okay. What's the meaning? Things that don't go right for me. Things that never go right. They never go my way. Okay, great. I don't want to get mad at that. I want to go, oh, this is what I'm holding in my consciousness because of a moment, or listening to my mom. You know, we're not the lucky ones, whatever that is. So I took a breath. I stepped out of the scene. I shrunk it all, and I imprinted a different thing. Things always work out for me. I saw the words I wanted, congratulations, rather than sorry, you know, and I felt the state of it, most important, the state of that wish fulfilled, and then the internal representation of it. And I started feeling that. I felt really good about that, and then locked it in. And then, of course, my brain went, all right, that was cool. Yeah, but what if you did this and it didn't work? Oh, wow, there's another layer. So I went deeper into that. And I keep going, and I can feel it still there. And so I have to keep going until one pattern is more of a memory, expectation, and a belief. And I will delete when I get rejected. It will delete. It will just be part of life. But because my brain is expecting that, just like falling when you learn to walk. You delete the falling. You just learn from it. What you're holding is the walking pattern in the brain the whole time, for the whole year, you know? And this is what happens. You start to just tune into and remember what you choose, and you process everything as feedback juxtaposed with that you. And this is what's important, to change everything inside: state, sensorial experience, past, present, projection, and see anything else as nothing more than a moment that got stuck, what people call karma. I know this is mentioned, the Sufis mention it, the Kabbalah mentions things like this, the kahunas talk about this. It's trapped energy, basically. Karma, Buddhists talk about karma. It's this energy that's trapped, that never left, that we have to now recreate because we're holding it. There's a judgment or attachment or whatever it is. And rather than choosing what we choose, and even if it shows up in the world, it's going to come and go too. We'll like it, we'll love it, and allow more of it. But yeah, that's pretty much how this works. It's understanding that's in here that's happening, even though out there is real, our meanings, projections, and feelings are in here.
Right. And a lot of people will say, oh, easy say than done. For you, yeah, it sounds easy. And no, it's not easy, but maybe, you know, we have some tools, but assuming they are not coming to us and they are just, you know, hearing the show right now, a lot of people feels like they get stuck. So what kind of advice would you give to someone who feels stuck and unable to to attract the positive changes they desire? Like the easiest tip that you can throw in here.
So a psychiatrist that I used to follow, Gerald Epstein, he got into basically imagery like this work. And I would say it's very, very simple. The first thing to do is to recognize that whenever there's a stressor, the nervous system, the body, brain never mastered the moment. When we're introduced to a dog or a fireplace as a child, there's a stressor and then we master it and then we're sleeping by the dog or the fireplace. Yes, because we learn what we need to learn. So there's no more warning in the system that I don't know what to do with this. And you learned how to deal with things. Either accept things, do something, learn something, or fight flight. That's it, right? Mm-hmm. If we're still in fight flight when it doesn't require fight flight, we haven't mastered the moment. So that's being created rather than the thing we say we want. So that's the first thing we have to accept. So whenever I'm stressed, I'll just speak for myself. Whenever I'm stressed about anything, I realize I haven't mastered a moment, meaning I haven't gotten comfortable in a situation I don't like so I can fix it or learn from it and deal with it. So just to put a square around that, right, to frame that. How do I fix my computer if I have a stress response? I can't deal with it. You can't deal with something if you're having an autonomic nervous system response to it. Unless you already know how to deal with it, you hit harder or faster. I'm trying to learn something or be something new or master something. You can't do it if the stress response is bigger than your ability to handle it, right? That's why in good boxing gyms, they'll do a pool noodle at first. Because if I can't deal with something coming at me, I can't deal with it coming at me, right? If I'm doing this, I can't really deal with it. As I start to learn to relax, then I can start to slip that punch. Then I get hit in the nose. Oh, well, that was weird. And I master that harder and harder. And all of a sudden, now I can deal with punches coming at me because I'm dealing with it rather than my body's response to it. Hope that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. So we need to self-regulate through the stressor, right? So as soon as you're experiencing something, you know that you have an internal projection that never got processed. And your body's still trying to run a fight. Because if I don't know what to do with that dog or fireplace, I have to run a fight. I just don't know what to do with it. So I can't get comfortable with it. But if I'm not running or fighting, then I'm in complaining, frustration, anxiety. Does that make sense? Anxiety is just the body saying, what do we do? You know, I don't know. It's okay. Then I'm just going to keep running this until you need me. You know, so that's the first thing. So then we have to look at what is the situation right now? You want to look at the belief. What's the belief? That you're projecting this moment into the future. Money's always going out. You know, no one likes me. The world is falling apart. Whatever that is, right? Okay, so you see the belief. No one loves me. Always get rejected. See the belief. Life's an uphill battle, right? You see the you say the belief, and then you see it. You have a picture that represents the belief. It has to be a picture because how will you know to confirm your belief unless there's a picture to confirm it in the world? There it is. Someone just left me. People don't love me. You know, people cheat. See, there it is. So we have to have an image and a sentence with it. Right? Okay. So we're going to identify what we're projecting. So that's the first two. Then you'll feel the feeling. Is it fear, shame, hurt, frustration, feeling of being trapped? Okay, so we have all three. And you have a sensorial experience. In addition to the seeing it, you get to sense it. You feel it physically, like the temperature of that experience. So you take three breaths and you recognize that this is just a pattern that got stuck. That's all it was that you never mastered. Either you model the parent, because that's what we do, or something happened and you decided to hold on to the energy because you didn't know what to do with it and never mastered it. So that's the first thing, okay? Now, first thing you want to do is self-regulate. You recognize you don't need fight flight to deal with it. If it doesn't require punching the person in that moment in the face or running for your life in the moment, right? And even that, anyone who does martial arts knows that the more comfortable you are, the faster you're going to hit and harder you're going to hit, strangely and ironically enough and paradoxically, right? So you tell the body and brain, I'm here to accept something so I can relax and still not like it. Still a problem, but you don't need fight flight. So what do? You sit in the face of it, right? And you ask yourself, does this pattern has a right to exist? Not as do I like it, not as it good. Does the existence itself have a right to be? Because you have to deal with something in order to deal with something. Well, you may not like it, but do people have a right to reject whatever that is? Okay, good. Does my body now have a right to process it? That's key. Mm-hmm. Because it didn't process it. What we did in that moment to make it get stuck, we did three things. We did about four things. We held our breath. That's why we hold our breath when we don't process something. We tensed our muscles. Right? We tensed our muscles. We held our breath. And the third thing we did is give it a meaning, a story. And then we reacted to it to manipulate our life so we don't experience it again. But it's always in us, so we're always worried about experiencing it. And so we're reversing that process because we're old enough, big enough, and hopefully we're in a comfortable environment. So we're going to do the opposite. Does my body have a right to process this? Good. Without my attention, is it biofeedback understanding, right? Without holding my breath and without giving it meaning. Now, in that, you start to go to Lester Levinson's work from the Sedona Method. You imagine you're opening doors and you see emotion as like bats to a cave. They're supposed to leave. They're not supposed to, we're not supposed to be afraid of them. They're just going, what do I need to do? So we want to imagine we're like a cave and the emotions are like bats. So it's respective areas in the back need to open and you need to feel the energy moving while you're not holding your breath. While you're not tensing your muscles, and most of all, while you're reframing it as I don't need fight flight, so I need presence. I need to be comfortable to learn about this, not react to it. They keep breathing, and you keep devaluing, not excluding, but devaluing the emotions. Right? And you keep going until there's a neutral self, like you're a cave, and the bats are still there. You're not getting rid of them. You're just indifferent to them because if you're not afraid of them, then they have no meaning to fight flight, like a fire alarm going off and you know there's toast burning. Like you gotta get comfortable. You don't need to jump. And it needs to know that you're not jumping, or the fire alarm's gonna get louder, so to speak. Right. So once you start to get comfortable, then you can deal with what is there. So the only meaning you now give it as you're starting to find a softening, and you can step out of the body if you'd like, right? You can step out of this body. And the only meaning you're going to give it, like imagine those near-death experiences where you step out and you're free. So that's where you want to identify with, that dissociative part while the body processes the emotion, right? So it's conscious dissociation, which is the idea of NLP and hypnosis. It's stepping out and looking at it. And it releases the charge. Now, then you want to like go somewhere else. Either if imagine the emotions are like a river, fine. Then you imagine you're going somewhere in an invisible realm, not a physical realm, an invisible realm. Into the scene and story that's the opposite. So nothing ever goes right for me. Things always go right for me. A different picture, a scene. And you're going to do the same thing. You're going to step into the picture. You're going to have a sensorial experience, a sentence, a story, and a feeling. And that feeling, it's not excitement. It's an ah. It's like I don't want anymore. I'm being loved. I'm important. I'm safe. I'm abundant. Whatever. Now, here's the rub to this. As soon as you do that, guess what your brain's going to do? It's going to say, that's not going to happen. The part of the brain, the autobiographical self-referencing network, the default network, the part that knows us, is going to say, that's not what we're used to. And that's when you say, oh, yeah, I know it's not going to happen. Why are you doing this? Well, the thing that I'm having in my head is not happening right now. I got my eyes closed. So I'm just I'd rather love this because I'm actually creating the problem if I'm paying attention to that when it's not happening with my eyes closed. So I just would rather love this. And that's what you have to say to the brain. I'm not trying to change anything. I would just like to know what it feels like to be loved and adored rather than judge when I'm not and the emotions around not, as an example. And that's when more energy will start to move and you're literally hypnotizing yourself by imprinting something that you're in a natural state of being when you were a child where imprints were easily accepted. Now you're opening this space by saying, I'm not trying to change anything. I'm just loving this rather than judging that, right? Mm-hmm. So then you go deeper. The second thing your brain's going to say is, okay, yeah, that's great. But what about all these emotions around the rejection? So, oh yeah, remember, that has a right to come and go. It can't run or fight. So it can leave. It can be processed. And get even more relaxed to create more room to go deeper into the new pattern. So you're giving yourself a new known experience, like the person you met for lunch, you know, where you internalized it and liked it. Okay. Now, the third thing you want to say to the brain, because it's going to try to do this too, so you beat it to it. You say, you beat the brain to this idea, which is you say, oh, by the way, even if this happens in the world, it's going to come and go. No one's going to love me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'd have a restraining order on them if they weren't so nice. I'd be like, would you stop? Right? So even in the world, it's going to come and go. I'll like it. I'll love it. I'll notice it. I like more of it. I remember it. Expect more of it. But I'm not going to be attached to the impermanence of even the positive. And that lets you go even deeper. And then all of a sudden, you lock into that feeling. And that feeling is your new past, present, future, unconscious behavior. And you'll know you're there when the other thoughts have no charge to that. No charge at all. So if you're thinking, oh, God, this is working, I hope that you have more work to do. When there's no more charge other than a physical reaction to the stimulus as a problem, and there's no charge, it's just like, I don't like it or like it, I'm going to move it or not move it. Then there's no charge. Then you know you've changed your reality. And then when it shows up, you don't go, wow. You just go, wow, of course. It just feels like it's been like that forever because you've already become it. You became the change you want to see in the world. You got to become it. Mm-hmm. As Joe Dispenza said beautifully at a workshop I was at recently, he said, people came up to heal. And I did this too with healing. So they never did this to heal. They did this to become someone different in their mind and body and mind and feelings and thoughts, not to heal. And then they happen to heal because life is a reflection as above, so below, right?
Right. So if I'm trying to put it in like very, very easy words, I just wrote a few things as the process, as you were telling it. I think one of the most important thing is not to escape, not to procrastinate, deal with the issue. And I, with me, I find it that it's better to deal with it now. Start dealing with it now and it will become better. Then think about limiting beliefs, because that's what happened. We hear those sentences, like you said, I am not lucky. Everything works. Everything goes very difficult for me. It's never easy. Money doesn't grow on the trees, and stuff like that. So try to be more aware of those words and sentences that you are telling yourself because you believe in them. And I like to even try to ask, where do they come from? And what are they associated with? What picture do you see when you think about those? If it's your mom that has been saying it to your dad, for instance. So try to think about the situation. Try to think about the picture. What do you see there? Because that is basically what is happening right at this moment. And it's an unconscious behavior. And then I would just say, yeah, I'm not going to just change something wonderful. It's not miracle that's going to happen, but I'm accepting it. And I will have skepticism and I will be doubt because that's the way I am. Also, I will ask myself, does that come from home? Am I used to hear skepticism at home? Were my parents always doubting things like that? Am I a believer or were I taught not to? So I would, you know, try to think of all of that and like hug it, almost hug it, even if it's weird to me, even if I'm not used to it, let's hug it. It may not be as painful as I think. And then less defenses will come. Then it becomes a little bit more easier. And tell yourself, trick yourself, I'm not trying to change it. I'm just trying to accept it. I'm just trying, like I said, to hug it, to feel better about it. For it not to hurt me, not to attack, not to feel that I'm being attacked. So I come from a different place. And then I will release control a little bit. And that's part of the problem, that we all want to keep control and keep holding the problems and the negative thoughts. And only when you do that, you can step out and say, okay, I'm looking at it now from a distance. And how can I reframe now? How can I see things in a better way? And it's like baby steps, I believe. And once you learn how to do it, and obviously adding the breathing, talking a lot to yourself, definitely, then you can start working on positive changes. How do I want it to look? What is the outcome I want? And I'm not ashamed to think big. I'm not ashamed to see a letter, like you said, coming, and the first word would be congratulations. you got accepted. And I believe once we learn to do that, then things start changing. Is it a miracle? Is everything going to work? I think one of the examples you gave in one of your classes is about if I want to win the lottery. So what does it mean if I, visualize myself getting the winning number and I win it? No, it doesn't mean that it's going to happen. But once you start thinking this way, and I believe in less holding that energy, releasing it a little bit, then things happen easier, quicker. It's just easier for us, even if we don't get the 100% end result.
Yeah, because what you're saying, beautifully said, by the way.
Thank you. What you're saying
essentially is that you're learning to manage your inner world, what the therapists call locus of control. Like you can have the external world, every time it moves, you're going to have an emotion or a happy emotion. And you're starting to take responsibility that the inner world, as Ramana Maharshi said, you know, happiness, seeking happiness is fine. It's your nature, just not outside. To get inside in your perspective and your letting go of attachment and your ability to receive. Yeah.
Right.
And funny enough, there is a woman. I mean, I won the lottery as when I was a kid, what I visualized. But there's a woman who won $115 million, and she wrote down $115 million. But again, it's not about if you're doing it to win the lottery. It's not about winning lottery. It's about becoming the nervous system of a person who has a nervous system of a person who can have an experience called fortuitous events or abundance or lucky. And just to be that, whether the lottery happens or not, is secondary. It's being a person to be that and being that. The real work is releasing the energetic karma around all the emotions, thoughts, memories, beliefs that we picked up from childhood or internalized or karma. Who knows why? You know, there's several reasons, modeling, but there's other reasons that we may not even know why we're here, right? So regardless of it, that's what we're doing. We're mastering those patterns so we are limitless consciousness beings. And whether the world matches the limitlessness of our consciousness is another story. That's not our business. But we sure as hell can create a lot more happiness inside before we even dare to start to want to create it outside.
Right. Wonderful. I really appreciate it. And I do want to say that we were live streaming now, but it will be, I think you also live streamed it on your page, but you can also share it later. People can also see it later on my page, on your page, on the LA Talk Radio page. So it will be there all the time and people can continue, you know, hearing it, learning it, practicing it. Because like we said, we cannot change the world. We cannot change the outer world, but we can change the inner world. And by doing that, we make things better. We make things easier. We bring something positive and every change starts with something small. So step by step, we can all make a little difference that may come and, you know, bring a bigger difference. And Joe, in like a quick minute, if you can just say if someone wants to be in touch with you, how can they get in touch with you?
The TAB technique, two B's, thetabtechnique.com, my website. You can email me at thetabtechnique@gmail.com. And you can even text me at 323-377-2531.
Wonderful. And if anybody has questions, you can obviously post them on the page or you can private message. And I'm ready to give you information as well. I would love to do it. And before we close, just wanted also to remind everybody, because I was asked that my book, I don't even know if you saw it, Joe, but I have the book that I wrote now in English. It's Unlock Your Child's Potential Through Numerology. Mm-hmm. Super interesting. Now it's been sold in Hebrew in hundreds of copies, and now it's available in English as well. So I keep telling the audience they can buy it on Amazon. I can send the link or contact me directly. And I very much appreciate your time here. I know you are a very busy man. So I really appreciate your time here with us, Joe, and hope to see you soon. And wanted to wish you just, you know, keep doing what you know how to do best. And you're a great mentor for me, and I'm sure for everyone that heard and will hear that show later on?
Oh, I'm doing the class June 1st, Law of Attraction. So I'll put that on my website for information that where they can find the class.
Live. Right on time. Wonderful. Great.
Well, great. Thank you for having me. It's great. You sound great. You're doing great. I can't wait to read your book, but I want a signed copy.
Absolutely. You'll get one. Wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much, Joe. Our time is over. And for the audience, we'll see you again next Wednesday. And Joe, we will be in touch. Thank you so much.
Bye. Thank you.
You're listening to Show Me the Numbers with Yael Kagan, only on LA Talk Radio.